Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember...
Commentary and analysis on the news media issues of the week. That's what you're going to get from the Media Project. Welcome to that. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. There you are.
Yo, Rex.
Okay. Down that microphone a little bit there, David. Only kidding. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and former UAlbany professor. How are you?
Good. Good morning.
Good. Good afternoon. Good evening. Whatever time of day you all may be listening to this, you can download this anytime you know at WAMC.org. And Judy Patrick is here, vice president of the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to sit with you august people.
August.
What a great group. Wow.
Well, yeah, we try to do our best. We're also, of course, always welcoming the opinions of our listeners at media@wamc.org. The president says he's upset with Fox News. He says that Fox News isn't doing enough to promote his presidency. The new Fox News, he tweeted, is letting millions of great, capitalized, people down. We have to start looking for a new news outlet. That's capital N, capital O. Fox isn't working for us anymore.
You know, when he was running, there were a lot of people thought he was going to lose. And one of the either rumors or speculations was that he was going to set up his own news organization and that he would run it. Because after all, remember, he was a... in his own mind, at least a TV star, and that he was going to have sort of the new news outlet, which he would be running.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that that's what's going to happen. I do think that he's just trying to get those people on Fox News who actually do journalism to do what the commentators do, which is to suck up to the president all the time.
Yeah, the question is, who has more hand in this situation, Trump or Fox News? Who's more powerful? It's interesting that Fox is not responding back. They're not standing up and saying, hey, we're a good news organization and you don't tell us what to do. It's almost like they have more power than Trump.
I do think Trump is angling to set up his own station. I think Alan has that right. But there's something even more deeply troubling in this. Trump sounds like the despot in the third world countries I've worked in who do have control over TV stations. They're state TV. He calls it us. They're not working for us. They're not promoting my agenda. That's not the job of an independent news organization. And a rare, from the liberal side, a rare shout out to Fox News, which truly is doing some great work. Not the commentators, the Hannity weirdos who are there, the whack jobs like Judge Perot. Judge Perot, she's awful. But the TV news anchors actually sometimes have more effect than those on MSNBC when they say, no, the president is not right, this is incorrect. That actually is more powerful.
Somebody like Chris Wallace, you
mean? Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a very good interviewer.
And one or two of them have answered back, to be fair to them, and said that the president was wrong on this. But ever since Roger Ailes was ousted, basically, there has been a mitigation of the pro-Trump approach.
And Trump lacks the self-awareness to know how wrong it is for him to say these things. And I mean, this is part of the pattern, I understand. But for him to say that he no longer works for us, maybe he's inferring that they're not working for the overall good of the American society. But it's clear that he's talking about his administration. And the fact that he lacks that self-awareness continues to be stunning.
I don't even think it's lack of awareness. I think he equates himself with the state. So you're not working for us. You are unpatriotic if you do not love me. Didn't he say that to journalists? You are unpatriotic if you don't support? Yeah, it's scary.
It's not a matter of awareness, because this guy is very aware. He's aware of one thing. He got to be president of the United States by being a semi-lunatic. And the more things he says, he figures that this is his ticket to success.
Alan, your words are particularly potent on today when we're looking at what the president did inserting himself into the news over Hurricane Dorian. Mm-hmm. And he misspoke. And he said the wind and waves were headed towards Alabama. They never were. Rather than just say, oh, yes, sorry about that, he doctored.
Yes.
I don't want listeners to say, oh, you're being distracted. You know, there are more important things. This is deeply serious when a grown man takes a map, an official map that has a date on it, and puts a little loop on it with a Sharpie and says, that's the official record. This is really...
A grown man that's president of the United States.
Yeah, this is scary stuff. So it's more than lack of self-awareness. There's something very wrong here.
Well, he doesn't know where Alabama is. That could be part of the problem.
To be fair, their ultimate way out is to say, well, the president himself didn't put that extra little loop in. Somebody else did.
Actually, they're not even saying that.
I don't think
at least that. One news outlet is reporting it was indeed the president.
Wow.
You know, and it highlights the difference between what Trump does and Joe Biden's gaffes. And that's been part of the discussion this week in the media as well. And there's a clear distinction. If he had originally just made a mistake about Alabama, but coming back and doctoring the map, that brings it to a whole different level.
Wow.
It is, but I don't think we need... I think it'd be a mistake to give a free pass to Joe Biden for conflating some stories into a single narrative, which is what he did. And it could be a gaffe. You could say that. Apparently what he did was he was trying to tell a story.
Yeah. Is what he did. And he embellished it. And he made it more interesting in the retelling than it actually was in fact, which is a big problem for journalists, too, when those facts get in the way of a great story.
But they lose their jobs about it. Yeah. That's how Peter Jennings, I'm sorry,
oh,
that's how
Brian
Williams lost his job.
He just made that up whole cloth. That was an embellishing.
But I think there's a false equivocation here.
You don't mean that. You mean false equivalency. You mean...
You are so right, Rex, as always.
Glad to help.
That's why you're the chief of this program.
There we go.
And you're absolutely right. But how can we say that this little thing that Biden is doing is equal to changing things and doing a map of... I mean, to me, it really is something that we should be very careful of.
There is a difference, but I think he needs to be held accountable for it. In fact, I think we should start counting them because he says he's in Vermont when he's actually in New Hampshire. It means something. You're running for president. You're the lead contender. And you have to be careful about what you say. He should know this at this point.
The question that becomes in some of these, in the case of Biden, if it's a question of character, of inflating episodes, or is it actually a matter of age? Would he not
Watch
be doing that?
Watch that, Rex.
Well, I mean, honestly, if we're choosing a president of the United States as opposed to somebody who runs a radio station, we might need to think about this, you know?
I think it's a big difference between being a candidate who misspeaks. I mean, he wasn't lying when he said, I'm in the wrong state. He made a mistake because he'd been traveling a lot.
Yeah.
He didn't really lie about the story. He overtold it because he's a gregarious storyteller. And many of us have that same problem. I understand it.
I love you, Rosemary.
However, I do think he's too old to be president, Alan, so let me make that clear. But one thing we have to realize is that he is consistently and over a long time the lead contender. He brings a comfort and a normalcy mm-hmm. that Democrats, at least, seem to be really striving for. So I almost think he's going to do worse if you start counting his gaffes. His gaffes, a stupid word.
Yeah, gaffe.
How come, you know, gaffes? Why are they lies for Trump's and gaffes for him? I mean, it is crazy how we account for this.
But you're right. I mean, and that is Judy's point, that lying about the path of a storm or a government document is of a different qualitative matter than kind of embellishing a story or, as you said, getting confused about where he is at a given moment. Who was the... which president was it? Now, you see, I can't remember it. Greeted his Secretary of Transportation, hello, Mr. Mayor, thought that it was a local official greeting him on the stage. And of course, at this moment, I can't remember if that was Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush.
Ronald Reagan was also too old to be president.
So what is it about the American people that they say, okay, to Biden, this is okay. I think they're projecting themselves into this. They say, hey, that's the kind of thing that I would do also.
It is. It is the kind of thing that any of us would do and have done. We have not said, oh, I made a mistake. Now I'm going to cover it up by doctoring the documents and blatantly lying. I mean, I'm sorry. That really is the thing about Trump in the past 3 months that has scared me the most. I think that's really telling.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Media Project is who we are. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith. And if you want to offer your thoughts, media@wamc.org. We're going to take a moment to talk about watchdog journalism, which is, of course, one of our favorite topics here. There's an interesting article in the current issue of Columbia Journalism Review. I guess it's old-fashioned print of me to talk about the current issue because Columbia Journalism Review is predominantly a digital product at this point, so there's no such thing as a current issue. It is there. In any case, talking about the commitment to investigative journalism that remains notwithstanding the budget cuts necessary in every media organization these days because of the diversification of revenues caused by the digital revolution. The point that I think is part of what some of the leaders of these organizations are making is that there is a business benefit because here it is, the notion put forth that investigative reporting plays a role in selling the value proposition to advertisers. There is that. Is investigative reporting fundamentally a product that has value for marketing? Is that what it is, really? Is that why we do it?
Independent journal and watchdog groups around the world have sprung up over the last 10 years, and they've gotten tons of donations because they've sold investigative reporting as a product that improves or fosters democracy. None of them, however, to my knowledge, none of them make money by selling these to other outlets, for example, to sell. No one makes money that way. You know, you cannot make a profit from it, mostly because most of our news outlets don't have money. If you're going to spend it, you're going to spend it on your own staff, not on buying something from an outside independent group. I think this is stuff that we've known for a long time. Investigative reporting is the most expensive of all reporting. It's the best reporters who do it. They get the high salaries. There are legal costs. There are copying costs. There are travel costs. There's all kinds of additional resources that have to go into investigative reporting that you don't covering a meeting or getting a cop blotter. On the other hand, is it why people pick up a newspaper or a magazine or go to a site? I have some doubts about that. Investigative reporting was never the mainstay of American news. Big Sunday newspapers used to print these stories, and people would kind of read them on their way to the sports page and the comics. It was never the seller. So I really think that if you're going to sell it as a product, you're not going to make a lot of money.
And yet you've all been editors or run news organizations. And I just want to ask you this, because I don't do that. But do you say, come on, gang, let's get something that nobody else has. Let's do this. Isn't that the way it works?
You know, I think of it as a reputation builder. I grew up in this era, sure, in the Albany area. And I remember looking forward to the Sunday Times Union because they always would have this really cool investigative story. And to this day, I remember some of them. It had a lasting impact on me for that paper that I know that it's committed to those kind of stories.
The point that Rosemary makes about it not being a moneymaker is frightening to me because our digital future, the people who are our strategic leaders plotting our digital future, believe that watchdog and accountability reporting is going to be key to sustaining our business model.
I worry about that because, okay, when you have these digital outlets now that say you can customize the news you want every day, how many people are out there clicking, I want to know about metropolitan investigative problems. I want to know about, you know, a malfeasance by the mayor. They don't. And even in surveys done by lots of consultants for newspapers that I've worked with, people will say, we want exciting, interesting investigative news locally. They don't. They want Monica Lewinsky stories told at a local level. Mm. And there's not a lot of them.
Well, the place where it intersects somewhat is in a story like Jeffrey Epstein. There's a great demand these days for Julie Brown, who is the investigative reporter for the Miami Herald, whose reporting back last winter was what brought the Jeffrey Epstein story forward now. It is what led to him being arrested finally again. And if she hadn't been writing about this, his misdeeds, which sent him to jail, remember, a decade ago, would have been forgotten and buried. But she brought it forward, and that's why this story still has currency now.
The
right?
value of investigative reporting is indisputable. I mean, I would bring up David Fahrenthold right now. He has made a beat out of the conflict of interest between Trump and his profiteering for his local business.
Of the Washington Post.
But you're talking now about national level investigative reporting. Who's doing that? the Washington Post, the New York Times. Occasionally, you'll get the L.A. Times in Miami. That's it. It's not going to sustain local journalism.
Don't forget Politico, the specialized things, Marshall Project on criminal justice.
And none of them make money. They all get grants.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
If we're talking about profitability, you can't win this argument. Right?
That's right. They are funded by not-for-profits and by foundations, as is public radio. A lot of it comes from donations, very small percentage from the government. And so the question is good journalism, is watchdog journalism and accountability reporting going to be dependent in the future upon the generosity of people, the same way that symphony orchestras and theaters can't depend upon ticket revenues alone to sustain them?
From the Department of Self-Serving, in the old days, we used to have to work very hard for donations during our fund drives. Trump gets to be president of the United States, and we start to have one- and two-day million-dollar fund drives. In one case, a $2 million fund drive in a couple of days. So I think people are willing to put money up when the circumstances justify it.
We all know that any one story is not going to boost subscriptions. The old day of single newsstand sales, single copy sales.
There we go. Single copy sales is the word we're looking for here. Good thing you're not running for president, don't you think?
It's long gone. Was that a gaffe or a lie?
So, Judy, do you think that there's a difference between what people are willing to put up for example, public radio and subscriptions to a newspaper?
Yeah. Yes. I think they view them entirely differently. I think a local newspaper provides far more hyper-local content, more information they need to perform their daily life. I think the local public radio station gives them a broader view of the world.
That's a good thought. But would there be a market? I think it's worth exploring whether local newspapers, at least one per community, can exist with foundation support. I worry about the smaller communities. You know,
the Youngstown of the world.
The Youngstown
Vindicator just shut down.
Just died,
month,
right.
And ProPublica said they would send in an investigative reporter. So will that save it? I'm sorry. I would love to say, yeah, this is great, and it's hope for the future, but I don't see it.
Right.
I don't understand what that means. Could you fill us in on background?
If this one reporter from ProPublica, they're great. They totally know what they're doing. So at best, he'll come out with two stories a year, maybe. Okay. They don't want the community, this independent organization, ProPublica, does not want Youngstown and the Mahoning Valley of Ohio to be without accountability,
to be a news desert. I see.
So they're sending their person in.
Yeah. So it's certainly worthy. Again, we get back to the worthiness and the importance is there. But is there money? I don't know. Rex, the Times Union just got a very great article in CJR saying that the whole NXIVM story, which has become a national story, first was told by your newspaper. Did that bring you tons of money and you're now hiring? And...
Sorry. No. And it is significant, by the way, that our NXIVM reporting, starting in 2003, was launched because of a beat reporter covering a planning board meeting who was there and saw that there was a proposal for this odd self-help organization who wanted to build a building in the town of Half Moon in Saratoga County. Ultimately, that building was rejected. It did not get built, but the interest had been piqued. Who is this organization? Who is this guy who is at the core of it, who was enjoined by an agreement with 13 state attorneys general not to operate anymore, not to operate a pyramid scheme? And what is this organization? And one thing led to another, and we got onto this story and, of course, kept at it. 9 years after that, we did a major investigative series that took us months and months to do. And it was not without significant pressure. There were a lot of people supporting NXIVM, that is NXIVM, for those of you who have not read anything about this.
And think it's something to stop your bile. Yeah.
Yes, rather than to have it rise. There were a lot of people who were connected to the then Senate Majority Leader, Joe Bruno, who were participating in this and were very offended by our reporting and came in to see both my publisher, George Hurst, and me to try to convince us to stop the reporting. There were investigations of us. It turns out NXIVM hired private investigative firms to dig up financial dirt on George Hurst and me.
And did they get anything?
Well, no, it turned out that the investigative firm ripped off NXIVM.
But it is reminiscent of Watergate, right? I mean, here are these local reporters who followed up on a story, and it became quite something.
So you see the importance of it, the difficulty of it, the expense of it, and ultimately, how how much money? What was your profit on that?
Yeah, well, zero.
Well, but integrity is integrity.
Well, yeah. then the New York Times kind of swooped in and took all the glory
the
away.
The New York Times, actually what happened was a PR consultant hired by NXIVM became apostate, living out in Buffalo. He created a website that drew the attention of a fine reporter for the New York Times, Barry Meyer, who wrote a story. The kernel of it came, at least, from the website, and that became a front-page story in the New York Times. And only after that happened did authorities pay attention. I was amazed that the district attorneys of Albany County and Saratoga County, you might, by the way, ask the Albany County District Attorney about that, Alan, next time you're with him.
Too late. I was with him this morning.
Yeah, we'll try next time. And the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of New York, none of these people, the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman at the time, nobody did anything about this until, of course, it appeared on the front page of the New York Times.
And there you see a bigger problem, because the smaller newspapers, the regional papers like yours, that find these stories are so hurt that they're cutting back on investigative reporting. New York Times would not know that story. The story we've seen this past week, where the Trump administration, without warning anybody, began sending notices to very sick children that you're deported, get out. That was found by the Boston Globe, and then it was picked up by MSNBC especially, and the New York Times, and it became a national story, and you see action. That's the way journalism has worked in this country, and we do not have a replacement for that. Who is going to find the stories and do the early reporting?
That's a very good point. Where are the stories going to come from for 60 Minutes? That's the history of 60 Minutes. You know, it swoops in and picks up a story from the Montana Standard in Butte or something like that, and suddenly we know something about abuse of the landscape in Montana by mining companies. And that is going to be lost if there isn't a sustainable model for local journalism that goes beyond entertainment. And that we are all struggling to find.
But who leads who? I mean, in the old days, the New York Times had a headline. You would hear it on NPR the next day. Now, every once in a while, not all the time, you get an NPR story that ends up in the New York Times.
So you mean you think
in
that...
In other words, I want to know which news organizations are leading other news organizations. You guys have done a great job of describing that now. But in the old days, it was always the Times started it, and then you'd hear it on NPR the next day.
Well, you know, there's a rare occasion where someone of import will say something interesting on the airwaves and it will be picked up by the print media. But yeah. I would say 99% of the time, these stories are coming from the print media.
That, Judy, is why I respect you. I respect you so much, because you're right.
Every now and then somebody says something on an airwave.
But Nancy Barnes, the new head of news for NPR, is saying, she's a great journalist, by the way, comes from newspapers, of course. She's newspaper trained. And she's saying that she wants NPR to break unique stories, not just follow, not just cover, but to come out with things no one's heard of before. I think that's great.
And, well, who wouldn't believe that?
Well, and as she says,
everybody says that.
Own the audio space, she says. You know, there's an awful lot of competition for audio these days. Everybody wants to have a podcast, and there are a lot of great ones. The New York Times podcast, The Daily, is a terrific program. But they have 30 people working on that show for a little half-hour program, and who can afford that?
The New York Times.
Yes.
Exactly.
And so for us to engage in podcasts, and we've done some, you know, we have a regular podcast from the state capitol, and we've done pop-up podcasts. But to do good audio is time-consuming and expensive, and to be competing in that space, especially on the local level, is very difficult.
That's a great word, competing. I think that's exactly what it is, because, you know, the Times Union, which used to be a newspaper, only now does podcasting. We, of course, at WAMC have always done podcasting, but it raises a certain amount of competition, doesn't it?
Yes, and this will all come in together. You know, you ought to be, you're there on the website, and we have a website, and the TV stations. We compete with local television, certainly, in breaking news digitally. And while TimesUnion.com is by far the dominant website in the region, that doesn't mean that we don't get beat by a lot of good competitors all the time. There is competition. There always has been in the media space. That's okay.
But don't you think there's more now?
No, there are fewer. There are fewer outlets.
Well, I mean between the various forms of news gathering. In other words, we may be competing with the Times Union. The Times Union may be competing with the local stations, as you have just suggested. And I think there's probably more of that intermedia competition than there ever
was. I think there's more collaboration than I've ever seen in my time in journalism. Rex being here right now is an example of that.
Yeah, why are you here, Rex?
Oh, it's the big bucks. Why am I here?
Who am I?
I've always felt that everybody knows who you are because you're here.
That's right, of course. It has nothing to do with that little print product down the road, absolutely. But in any case, before we leave the show, we just want to make one little notation about who actually is paying attention to local news. A new poll that has just been released by the Pew Research Center finds who is most interested in local news. We only have a minute to discuss this, and we'll get back to it next week. Older Americans, Black adults, and Americans with less education are more interested in local news, say they follow the news most closely. Isn't that interesting? And the higher you go in education, the less attention you're paying to local news, according to this study. That surprises me. So
this is part of research that also found that only 14% of U.S. adults in the last year have paid for local news. Only 14%.
14%
have paid. Well, 70% of Americans believe that we are doing well financially.
The media.
We the media.
Yeah,
we, the
right.
local media.
That's fascinating.
Don't.
So only. Free media becomes more accessible for so many people, according to those stats. Is that what you're saying? So, for example, if you don't pay for your newspaper subscription and you go to a free site, that might be an indicator of what's coming.
Yeah, except no news comes free. It takes dollars and cents, which is kind of what we've been talking about in this program. And we don't have time to go into it any further, sorry to say. All right. Ellen Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and Dee for joining us on The Media Project.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.